This is Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
We have a great episode for you today. We're going to start with some headlines before doing some reflections and predictions for the next year. And then we'll close with what we're loving this week. One other small note before we start today's podcast. Donnie and I will be taking a break for the next 2 weeks, and we'll be returning with new episodes starting January 7th. It's the end of the year, folks, and that means it's time for those end of the year contributions and donations to your favorite nonprofits and organizations. Donnie, can you talk a little bit about what it looks like to support Fresnoland and what those contributions and donations are going to allow you to do in covering Fresno better?
Absolutely. So we are a nonprofit 501c3 newsroom. We have been since 2018. And we don't have a paywall. It's really important to us in Fresno to make sure that all of our stories, almost 400 of them that we produce this year, are free for every single person in Fresno to read, regardless of how much money they make. And that work is the type of work that we do in depth. Often investigative journalism is very expensive to produce, mostly from a labor perspective. And while we do have a lot of really supportive philanthropic foundations that do support us at Fresnoland, that does not necessarily provide all the support that we need to make sure that we can be flexible and adaptive to new things that pop up. For instance, when all of the issues went down with Bitwise this last year, we didn't have any specific resources set aside to cover that issue. When Art Hop really morphed into a different event, that was another issue that we were able to step in and cover because of reader resources and reader support. So it's things like that allow us to be responsive in real time. And that's why we appreciate any giving, whether it's $5 a month, whether it's $10 to Fresnoland. It all makes a huge difference. And you can donate to us at fresnoland.org/donate.
Quality journalism costs money. That's just how the world works, right? Yep. Stories take research. They take boots on the ground. They take long hours. It's work and it costs. And
a lot of us are not rewriting press releases.
A lot of us have gotten used to a lot of free things online, but the truth is someone's always paying for it. And if we want to continue to have high quality journalism here in Fresno at Fresnoland, we need your help. We're going to jump into some headlines this week. There's two things that I wanted to cover. The first was there was a major decision last Friday that came down, and this has been a long time coming for you. I want you to explain a little bit of the background. I don't want to dig too deep. But explain the background and explain why this decision, this agreement, was such a landmark. Why this decision was so important for the future of Fresno.
Yeah. So, those of you who may know me know that I used to work at City Hall a little over a decade ago. And when I worked at City Hall, I remember the city manager at the time, Bruce Rudd, talking a lot about the city-county tax sharing agreement. And whenever it came down to, why aren't we doing more of this? Or why are we not able to develop in Southeast Fresno? Or why can't we expand into this area? He would always point back to the city-county tax sharing agreement, because it's like a fundamental document that says, this is when the city annexes new land. This is how much the county keeps of property taxes and the annexed land. This is how much the city keeps. And then those property taxes are core to the city's budget and being able to provide police protection, fire protection, etc. In the city, I was in a meeting with the mayor earlier today, the city gets about 40% of its revenue from property taxes. So it's a pretty, you need your property taxes. The old agreement fell apart in 2020. The city and county of Fresno hate each other and have for some time. So negotiations between those two groups are always difficult. And then last week, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, we found an agreement. I've been talking to people for the last 3 months knowing that this is potentially coming. So I wasn't entirely caught off guard, but mostly caught off guard.
What do you think, what caused this change? What do you think was the source of it? It was just incremental and we got to a point where it tipped, or?
There's a couple of factors. So without a tax sharing agreement in place, it was really hard for the city to expand its city limits, which pissed off developers because they want to expand, they want to annex. And it was just a huge regulatory hurdle for them. And so they were putting pressure on both the city and county. So you have that dynamic. You have and the mayor said this to me multiple times, Fresno's looking at what's happening in Madera County, where Madera County is growing very rapidly. They're looking at Clovis. Clovis is also growing very rapidly. And they're saying, we're losing our people to those places and we don't want to do that. Now, from a financial standpoint, it's short-term revenue, property tax, but then you take on the long-term obligation. So every neighborhood, every property you annex, you are now carrying that property into perpetuity. And city officials and politicians like that revenue because they get to claim the win in the short run. And then their successors navigate the long-term headaches that come with that. Doesn't matter to them. So anyways, that's some of the dynamics. You also have Luis Chavez, Gary Bredefeld on the city council who are joining the county board in January, which will change the dynamic a lot. So there was some definite allusions to let's get this done before the county dynamic changes and we're going to have to start negotiations all over. So that was part of it. I don't know.
Yeah. What does it mean?
So the new agreement basically changes some financial incentives. So in the past, the financial incentives were not helpful for the city to annex, but the city did it anyway, and they just ate the cost. So now if the city wants to grow into SEDA, which is, it's a massive mega development accommodating up to 45,000 new homes, which is like the size of Clovis. It's been a big topic. We've reported on a lot at Fresnoland. The financial incentives have now changed so that if the city annexes in SEDA, they'll keep 51% of the property tax revenues, which is higher than any other land that they could annex. It decreases the incentives for growing west of 99. So now the city will only get 40% of the property tax revenues. And then it really decreases the incentives for the city to annex county islands. They basically said, we're not going to annex county islands. If you live in Old Fig, you're going to be in the county forever. If you live in Sunnyside, you're going to be in the county forever. The mayor said, if people really want to be annexed that live in those places, the city will absolutely entertain it. But they're not, the city used to have a policy of like proactive annexations where they would go like into Fort Washington and try to annex people. And they've just learned people don't like that. There's, as a planner, I will say being annexed is good. County islands are bad from a service delivery perspective, but we don't have to go into that right now.
Yeah.
So that's like what it does. It changes how much property or sales tax the city gets. They get a little bit more in the new agreement, but more or less like the short answer is it just makes it so much easier for the city to develop.
And we'll dig into this further in the new year. Mm-hmm. This won't be the last time that we cover this. The other major thing that's happening this week, and depending on when you're listening to this, you may know more than what we know currently, but tomorrow is the sentencing in the Bitwise trial. There's been a lot of documents that have been made public. My understanding is the DOJ wants 12. Our old friends Irma and Jake want 5, probably somewhere in the middle. What do we know about what's going to happen tomorrow?
I don't really know more than what the public documents say, and Juliana on our team has been scouring those because she'll be at the sentencing hearing. So,
do you think this is going to be cathartic for people? What's your feeling on the ground in terms of what this will mean for people when they're finally sentenced?
It's interesting because Juliana has been talking to a lot of the employees or former employees over the last year and a half since the whole brouhaha. And people really just want closure. They want to move on.
Yeah.
I think they've lost a sense that they're ever going to get full justice and financial compensation for lost 401ks that they, or lost wages. I think that's water under the bridge at this point. And now they're just, can we reclaim our reputation and make something good of a really horrible experience?
To Today, we're going to spend some time reflecting on 2024, an eventful year, and also making some predictions about the next year. A lot of things have changed here with elections at the end of 2024. That could mean that 2025 is going to be a wholly different environment, politically, economically, and much more. So let's start with a simple one. What do you think was the most underreported story of 2024?
I hope this is not a cop-out answer, because it's a national story that is, of course, local here in Fresno. But I think the election made it really clear to me and to a lot of other people just how much people feel so disconnected from the economy right now. And, you know, you see it anecdotally through a lot of different places. And I spend some time on the Fresno Reddit, and you're just like constantly seeing people.
The Fresno Reddit is great.
I kind of love it.
It's so much fun.
Hello, fellow Fresno Redditors. Yes. People are always posting, I just finished 50 interviews and I didn't get a response to a single one. And that's a really common, I don't know if you've seen it too.
Yeah.
So I just think that as journalists, while it's not like a specific event that you can react to, it's a thing that people are experiencing. And I think we need to dive in deeper and really bring some light to that. And also, because this is what we do at Fresnoland, really explore what are the ways in which our local organizations can respond to that better.
Yeah.
Or maybe already are responding to it and we're just not aware.
Yeah, I think the election returns, the Biden-Trump divide in Fresno was super fascinating and is indicative of the fact that maybe we don't fully understand. And yeah, what was the most surprising story of 2024?
I think this suffers from recency bias, but FTA not flipping either of the seats that they spent quite a bit of money to in Fresno Unified. I think maybe just as a broader theme, money did not win the day in local elections. And that's always a surprise. When
it is fascinating. What do you think won elections then? If it wasn't money, what won elections?
I think we talked about this before, but I think it's face-to-face interaction. I think it's name recognition, some sort of connection that people have to others.
Should we reframe this as a good thing? Money having less impact on election outcomes?
I think it's a good thing, but I was having a conversation with a friend a couple of days ago about this, about We were talking about how developers have given less in local elections recently, in part because of a new state law, but the tax sharing agreement is exactly the outcome that developers wanted. And so we were just reconciling, council members aren't necessarily voting on this because some developer gave them $5,000. The dynamics are more complex, and it's a good prompt for me to keep exploring like how these dynamics work and then to explain to other people how it does work.
Yeah, I think the average person listening likes the idea that money plays less of a role in elections, and I think that's a good thing. But what it does tell us is that there's maybe some variables that we don't fully grasp or understand that are moving the needle now.
Correct.
So on that same note, what did we learn about Fresno through the 2024 election results?
People like change, but then they don't. I don't know.
It's mixed, okay.
It's mixed, right?
Maybe some points.
There's some common points. People want someone who they feel like they can connect to. So like the in-person interactions were really important in this cycle. And we saw this with Luis Chavez, with Gary Bredefeld, with Nick Richardson, with Andy Levine. I think that's four candidates.
Luis literally described walking to every single house and knocking on every single door.
That matters to people. People are not, in my experience in Fresno, people are not hyper-partisan here. And so you can convince a lot of people through a face-to-face interaction about something. So maybe that's what we know about Fresno. Fresnans like connection.
Yeah, they want a familiar face and they want to feel like their elected leaders connect with them.
Correct.
Which I think you could make the same case that happens nationally, but given how tribal and partisan things are, that maybe is less of an effect at the national level.
Yeah.
What was your favorite Fresnolandia episode this year? We've done a lot of them. Yeah. I was reflecting on that personally, and this started in July, and it's been every week, and we've had a lot of fascinating episodes, a lot of great topics.
What's your favorite?
The homelessness episode was probably the most intriguing for me because that book left such a large impact. But probably the most interesting episodes were some of the early ones as we were still figuring out this medium, particularly when the Art Hop fight was going on.
Those
were super fascinating and fun. What about you?
That was a good one. I think I'd have to say the book club we did with Moss, in part because that book left a mark on me a little bit. And I ended up finishing the book in a hotel room in London and like crying afterwards.
Wow.
And I'm not a crier at all. I cry like once every 3 years.
What was your biggest takeaway from the book? Like, what is the mark?
He took a story of tragedy and oppression against his family and somehow was able to find a lot of meaning in that. And still, I think he was still able to like interrogate his own family in a really compassionate way and the decisions they made in a really hard time dealing with a family member who had a severe disability. And like the way that he interrogated his family, but in this really compassionate way, was really beautiful to me.
Yeah, because we all have family secrets. And this is something we talked about in the podcast, or things that we're ashamed about in our families.
Right.
And the typical approach is just to bury it, push it down. And he decided to grab a hammer and go at those nails and those floorboards and go digging under the house. And typically that doesn't end well when you do that with family.
I always like have fantasies about doing that to my family, but usually in a really vengeful way. Because on the surface, I could be somewhat aggressive, but I really loved how he asked those questions, but there was still a deep love and compassion. And I'm like, maybe someday I'll be able to do that to my family too. But
yeah, handling conflict, I think we could all learn from Moss in that respect.
Yes, we can.
For you, which Fresno mover and shaker had the biggest impact this year on the city? And it can be either good or bad.
I think that goes broadly to labor. I think.
Okay. But
there's not one specific person I would point to.
Organized labor as a...
Organized labor, in my view,
as an avatar, if you will.
Yeah, and it's not that they had all hits. Look at FTA. They had a huge hit last year and then had some pretty large misses this year. But I would say as a whole, they are having more impact than they have historically had. And that could potentially be a bias of I'm just paying a lot more attention now than I used to. And that could be true, but I'm going to go with that.
Okay. And then the last one on this reflections, what do you think is the biggest local story of the year? Is the SEDA agreement, is that in your mind the biggest story of the year? Or what would you point to of what story is going to have the largest impact going forward, you think?
I'm definitely biased to the tax sharing agreement and everyone's trying to dump. I felt so gaslit last week by so many people. They were like, this isn't consequential. And I was like, absolutely, this is hugely consequential.
Yeah, it's going to set the development track for the city for a long time.
It sure is. Don't let people tell you otherwise. That's a really big one. But I think that there's been... I think that how Measure T passed in Madera County is going to be really influential for how local ballot measures get moved on the ballot in the future. I think we're going to see a lot more.
And remind people about what Measure T.
Measure T is a transportation sales tax in Madera County. It was passed this time through like a signature gathering effort, and which meant that it needed a lower voter threshold to pass. So they only needed 50% plus one support. And so that was how it got across the finish line. And I think a lot of governments are going to be like, why would I try for a path that I need 66% of the voters to support this when I only need 50 if I just take it through signatures?
Yeah, less compromise, less coalitions.
So you're going to start to, like, I think we're already hearing rumors that there's going to be potentially three versions of Measure C on the ballot in 2026 because of this, because there's no incentive for the coalitions to join.
Yeah. We're going to set down our diaries and we're going to pick up our crystal balls now and think about the next year. So what do you see as the biggest conflict that's going to emerge in Fresno as a result of the change in the presidential administration? Is it immigration?
It's probably immigration, except that I am constantly reminded that deportations at a high level have been happening in the Biden administration, definitely in the Obama administration. So this is not something new that our communities are having to deal with. But the nature of deportation and the nature of who is affected, specifically in Fresno, could be really different. Someone was showing me some data last week, we haven't published this, that shows that a lot of people who are living in Fresno at the moment who have what's called like quasi-documented status, so they're here with some paperwork, but they're not on the path to a green card at this point.
So they're not Are they permanent residents with a green card?
No, no green card. They're called parolees. It's a specific status that was granted under the Biden administration, typically for people under asylum type.
Okay, waiting for their court hearings.
Correct.
Okay.
And the largest number of people with that status are from India.
Oh, interesting.
That live in Fresno County. And so who we think of when we think of people who are the most at risk is changing in Fresno. So I think that's something that's going to pop up, I would imagine, in the next few months. The other thing that was brought up in a meeting I was in earlier today is just, I keep forgetting, I think we always live with the existential threat of high-speed rail going away. Everyone says they hate the project and they're going to pull the funding, and it just like somehow keeps eking along. And we get press releases every 6 months. Look at this new like structure we built that's still a tiny little piece of the puzzle. There's a world where the Trump administration finally pulls the plug for good, and then we're left with a bunch of pylons. So that's a real thing.
Yikes. Those pylons.
Maybe someone will turn them into public art.
Yeah, I think another thing, and I don't know how real this is. It was funny. I was looking on social media, and I saw that ABC 30 posted a picture, and the caption was Trump saying that improving the cost of the grocery store is going to be harder than he anticipated.
That.
And so it's hard to say with the tariff threats, like how real those are. And obviously tariffs will affect every industry, but
absolutely,
agriculture will be hit and manufacturing will be hit severely.
Absolutely.
And so if that does come to pass, I think we're going to see a lot of discontent and frustration, particularly in our region, across the country. But that could be a thing that has a big impact locally. Now, we just talked about labor, but let's dig into it again. What do you predict will change in how labor negotiates and labor power in Fresno in 2025?
I think it's actually going to be pretty rough, because local governments, and this is, I would presume, true for school districts as well, are coming out of an era of pandemic resources. ARPA is ending. And so they're now having to figure out how they fund their budgets without massive federal stimulus money. And the city of Fresno has adopted some pretty major pro-worker contracts, and people are getting raises and they're getting more benefits. And now they're realizing that they don't have the money to necessarily pay for that. So I think that's going to make it really hard for labor in this next year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing it in school districts as, mm-hmm. you know, as the belts tighten and the deficit becomes more real at the state level. And, you know, a lot of people whose jobs were created during COVID, with a lot of the COVID money that was flush in school districts, things are, you know, belts are tightening, and yeah, that's going to continue. So what
do, but on the private sector side, and I know we don't have a really robust private sector union cohort here in Fresno, but do we think that the shifts in the labor market are going to be pro or anti-union?
I mean, if governments, if you think of like public-private partnerships, you think of government subsidies for certain industries, you know, being pulled back, you know, it's going to be harder to negotiate if you're organized labor. So I imagine that it's going to get harder across the board. What do you think will turn out to be the most consequential local election result for Fresno? We talked about Measure T, but something that's specific to Fresno, maybe it's going to affect Fresno internally.
I'm going to go with Gary Bredefeld.
Okay.
I think that of all the local elections, while philosophically he is not very different from Steve Brando, his predecessor, I think that the way that he approaches governing is very different, and that he will be a thorn in the side at the county board, and we'll see a lot more public discussion of decisions the county is making because of Gary.
Yeah, it seems like he likes grandstanding, and that's not typically the way we understand the Fresno County Board.
No, they're
quiet and slow moving, if you will.
It might be called Gentleman's Club, and
yeah,
no one would argue with that. Yeah, no, he's gonna, and like I know that's part of his shtick. Like he says, I'm gonna end the Gentleman's Club or end the old boys club or whatever he calls it. But I think there's some truth to it, and I don't always agree with the way that he shakes things up, but I think that's just what he will deliver on that promise.
Okay. And this next question I wrote before the SEDA agreement, but do you think that the decreasing development dollars locally will continue in 2025? Now in light of SEDA.
Yeah, I do think that's going to keep going down. I think that Fresno's efforts to try to go towards SATA are, even the tax sharing agreement, while very consequential, the earliest we could even see movement on that front is not going to be for another several years. And the market is just constantly in cycles of boom and bust, and I don't think we're heading towards a boom right now at the moment. So I don't really see that happening in the near term.
What started in Fresno in 2024 that maybe flew under the radar that's going to become important in 2025?
I think it goes back to this disconnection of people from the economy and from civic life. And we see how, or I've been watching how people have reacted to the murder of the healthcare UnitedHealthcare CEO. And I'm like, oh yeah, I see that in Fresno. I see that sentiment, that pocket of people and
the glee of
it. Yeah, that sentiment of feeling so desperate and so disconnected, that kind of radical act would be celebrated. I do think that sentiment definitely exists here. And I think it's only going to get louder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm waiting for the protests to start. It'll probably start as day one with the day one decisions, pardoning of January 6th, insurrectionists, all this stuff. It's just, it seems like it's a ball that's rolling right towards a conflict.
But another thing I'm hearing that is somewhat, I don't know, don't love it, is I'm already seeing politicians locally take this very real disconnection that people feel, that people that are middle class who may not qualify for government subsidies for SNAP or for subsidized affordable housing, but still are very much feeling the crunch, and using that to justify all sorts of decisions. And because the disconnection is not clearly defined. Oh, if we only had a greater subsidy of our rent. These are often people that are just making things work, and their demands as a class or as a constituency haven't really been expressed except make things cheaper. So that worries me a little bit that there's going to be a lot of bleed into the narrative. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think, yeah, and I think you're right. I think things are changing a little bit. The Biden administration was very much, was working on subsidies for people like us, student debt forgiveness and things like that. And a lot of that's changing. I'm going to have to pay every dollar of that back. And I think the outcome is going to be interesting to watch. Now, last prediction question. Will we get a new and good Taylor Swift album in 2025? Yes or no? It's two-part, new and good. I know she's working on music currently.
We're going to get Reputation Taylor's version in 2025. That is going to happen. It's going to happen, and it's going to be excellent.
Okay. I'll admit, I don't listen to a lot of Taylor Swift. When she swings, does she usually hit the ball? Or is
yes.
it? Okay.
But I'm biased. I'm not a music critic.
You're a fan.
I'm a groupie.
So. Yeah, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to close today with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to go ahead and start with my own, which is I'm loving end-of-the-year lists. I am an end-of-the-year list person. It's so much fun. I was talking about this recently with someone who was saying some negative things about film criticism because I was going through the end-of-the-year movie lists. And I think if you treat them like dogma, sure. Like, you shouldn't just take for granted whatever a critic likes and just like it. But at the same time, the critic's job is to sort through all the crap and find the gems. And if you want to spend the time sorting through, or you want to trust aggregated data from Rotten Tomatoes, then great, power to you. I have less time than I used to and want to give some direction. And I think one of the best things that you can do, and this is just beyond end of the year lists, is find a couple critics that you really respect and whose opinion that you value. Like, one person locally is Donald Monroe, who writes the mm-hmm. Monroe Review. Like, I really trust Donald's opinion on classical music and the arts. And that's just a local thing. I remember back in the day, I hate bringing up the New York Times. I just hate it, but I'm going to do it.
We are those people who
yeah, well, and the New York Times spends a lot of money to get the best people. So this is just what it is. I used to religiously read A.O. Scott's film reviews. Like, he was a I think he's a literary critic with the Times now, but he used to review movies, and it was like an event when one of his reviews came out. And I learned the things he liked, the things he didn't like, and then I took what I knew that where we aligned and would run at those movies if he liked them. And then the areas where we diverged, I would just ignore it. But I think learning his, understanding his eye and what he looks for was so valuable. And so I really appreciate end of the year lists. And it's always fun when they come out because you can look back on the year and see what you missed and catch up. And so I've been watching a bunch of the movies that were on the list.
Do you make your own list?
So I, some people may know this, I do, I have a book email that I send out to about 40 people every month where I list everything I've read. It's not only like a way for me to broadcast my opinions about books, which are just whatever, but it's a way for me to keep track and have a calendar of what I've done. And that's been really fun for me. I don't make end of the year lists, but I do point out books that were special for me. And I've started to include movies in that email as well, which has been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. My husband, Scott, is a major end of year list person. And for the last 2 weeks of the year, like basically spends all of his free time making end of the year lists.
That's fantastic.
And he does it with his brothers. And it's a
whole kind of list do they make?
Usually top albums of the year, but sometimes they'll do top albums of the decade and refresh the list they made from the year before. That's and so then fun. We do in our personal, like just me and my husband and my kids, we do a solstice process where we make lists of all the top things that we did and enjoyed and moments and experiences, and then have a candlelit dinner where we discuss it.
Yeah, I think there can be this thing where, you know, kind of social media, like where you're scrolling on to the next. And I find that not a lot of people really take the time to reflect at the end of the year and try to remember all they've done and appreciate. And I think it's a really important practice. What are you loving this week?
So what am I loving this week? Just had it.
Making New York Times cookies and just talk about the New York Times all the time.
Yeah. How did you know that I'm making New York? Oh, Instagram?
Yeah. You put it on Instagram.
I mean, okay. So since we're on the topic of being New York Times people, I am guilty. I am making my way through their cookies recipes.
Vaughn is the best. I think Eric Kim makes the best cookies personally of all the people on there.
Which one is an Eric cookie recipe?
I just did one just 2 days ago and brought it to work today. And
which one was it?
People devoured it. It's his newest one. It's a lemon turmeric crinkle cookie.
Oh, I saw that.
It is incredible.
It's really good.
It's super easy to make too. Yeah.
Okay, so I just made the Mexican mocha ones.
Oh God, I love Vaughn. Vaughn is the funniest. If you want just like 20 minutes of entertainment, just watch that man make cookies.
Yeah.
It's
we were so watching my son and I were watching his video about it. And then I have the gingerbread cheesecake ones on the list. I made the gingerbread latte ones. Those were excellent. We're also making the peppermint brownie ones. And then there was another one I forget that is on that list. Anyways, we're making our way through all the cookie recipes.
Fantastic.
And then I will say as a second thing I'm loving, so my son and I do errands every Saturday, and he and I have gotten in a routine where we set time limits for every store we attend.
Whoa.
And it gets progressively faster. So we have successfully done Costco in 45 minutes, like multiple
How?
Times.
Just with physical violence, like shoving people out of the way? How do you do it?
It's a lot of restraint. You you know your aisles and you know the ones you can't go down.
Yeah. You have to skip looking at those new Kirkland jeans and just
go
on to the...
You cannot go in the middle. You cannot go in the middle. The middle is off limits.
Middle is a trap. It's always a trap. Every store, the middle is always the trap.
You really have to just skip everything until you get to alcohol.
Mm.
The party starts with alcohol and then you do your things and then you skip medicine. And that's how it's possible.
Wow. I don't think I've ever only been in Costco for 45 minutes. So maybe I'll make that one of my New Year's resolutions this year, is to try to get out of there in less than an hour.
It's very fun.
I get trapped, yeah. I will admit. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.